From Wondery, I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams.
And I'm Brooke Ziffrin.
And this is Even the Rich. Over the last two episodes, we followed Ben Affleck as he found the love of his life in J-Lo, lost her, and then made his way back to her all over again.
From his early peak with Good Will Hunting to his tragic back tattoo, Ben Affleck has been through it. But the entire time, he's just been trying to keep his demons at bay.
And now, Bennifer is back. And that means true love finally found a way. Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez's brief love affair was so legendary that their reunion this year was front page news. Talk about a phoenix rising from the ashes.
And don't sleep on J-Lo either. With her signature tabloid savvy, she turned a potentially embarrassing breakup with former MLB pro Alex Rodriguez into the biggest celebrity news story of the year.
In our series, we talked about Ben Affleck's personal and professional journey, but we didn't talk very much about his or Jennifer's celebrity image.
Both Ben and Jen have had shifting relationships with the paparazzi and their own fame, and we want to dive deeper into how things have changed since 2002.
So today we're talking to Anne Helen Peterson about the sad Affleck meme, why we still care about that butt grab on the yacht, and why Bennifer 3.0 might actually have a fighting chance.
Anne Helen Peterson is a writer, journalist, and certified expert in gossip. She's well known for her work writing about the construction of celebrity images for BuzzFeed. She's also the author of several books, including Scandals of Classic Hollywood and Too Fat, Too Slutty, Too Loud, The Rise and Reign of the Unruly Woman. Currently, she writes the newsletter Culture Study.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that she's the perfect guest.
Oh my God, you have perfect hearing.
Hi, Anne. We're so excited to have you here today. Thank you for joining us.
I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, I feel like we've been trying to get you to come talk to us for months, so we're super pumped.
Yes. Yeah.
So before we get started, can you introduce yourself to our listeners? What does Anne do?
Well, I'm a culture writer and I write a newsletter called Culture Study. But my particular area of expertise and why I'm here today, I think, is that it's weird to say it this way, but I have a PhD in celebrity gossip. Like I have an actual PhD in media studies and my dissertation was on the history of celebrity gossip. So I really do have a PhD. I am a doctor of celebrity.
Nice. I think that is so cool.
Yeah, that's actually really cool. So what is your relationship to Bennifer? Like, have you just been following their romance since the beginning?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is the thing. Elder millennials like myself and I think middle millennials maybe, but and young Gen X, like there's just a real investment in Bennifer that dates back, even pre-Bennifer 1.0. Like, I have been very interested in Ben Affleck's love life since the late 90s. He is a fixture. He has a dynamic and fascinating and ever-changing love life, which makes him an interesting person to gossip about, right? And this is the thing about like what makes good gossip, what makes like interesting gossip. Like you have to have someone whose life actually changes. Someone who is married to the same person forever. You're like, what are we going to talk about?
Yeah, truly. Well, okay. So Bennifer obviously was a huge, massive, ginormous tabloid fixation back in 2002. But it seems like even after almost two decades, people are still very interested in knowing about them. And I'm curious to know, why do you think we're all so obsessed with this relationship?
I mean, there's a lot of things going on. First is that Ben Affleck himself, as we were just talking about, is someone whose love life has changed many times over the past 20, 25 years through the different sorts of people that he has been associated with. But also, like, he's just sloppy, right? Like, he has sloppy breakups, and he looks sloppy after them, and his face is expressive. And when it gets caught by paparazzis looking the different ways that it looks, you can read a lot into that, right? And, like, we don't really know what Ben Affleck actually does or does not feel about any of these things, but it's very easy, it's very straightforward to create a narrative around him. And so I think that in addition to the fact that this is like recreating an older relationship, right? It's reviving something that is already loaded with significance.
Yeah.
But also, it's just like, you know, we've watched Ben Affleck's recent evolution from like Sad Fleck when he was in the Batman movie and everyone was like feeling so bad for himself. And then like, the, you know, the relationships with younger women, like just a lot of pictures of him like smoking cigarettes and like staring out into the ocean. You know, there's just a lot of, there's a lot of texture there. And again, I don't know if people who haven't been like present for this whole evolution find it as interesting as we do.
Well, on that topic, you know, for our listeners who aren't Bennifer stans or aren't lucky enough to have a PhD in gossip, can you tell us about how the paparazzi and the tabloids derailed the relationship the first time? Like, how much do you think the Paps are really to blame for breaking them up?
Oh, I don't know if it's the paparazzi so much as like, because they played into that, right? Like they...
Yeah,
like a lot of celebrities during that time, the paparazzi were both central to their celebrity, right? They were like responsible in some ways for them being as visible and as popular as they were, but also were the reason why they began to feel overexposed and like created a discourse about them that they were kind of trashy, right? Like that they were they were too in the public eye. They were too transparent about their relationship with one another. And then they made this horrible movie. And I think the weight of that discourse, it was so heavy that it was too much for the relationship itself to bear.
Yeah. Well, obviously, this iteration of Bennifer is getting a much warmer reception than it did the first time around. What do you think has changed in the media landscape since the early 2000s?
Well, and I'd be interested to hear what you guys think about this as well, because I think that we like both of them a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think they're just more mature celebrities now.
Yeah.
Like, we don't look at them as these two young kids in love. I think we see them as adults now.
Yeah, well, and like, to, for lack of a better word, they're celebrity survivors, right? Like they have made it to this this point. They have endured a lot. They have endured a lot of breakups. They've endured a lot of crap thrown their way just because like the celebrity industrial complex is just really difficult to navigate. And I think that if anything, like Ben Affleck's visible sadness and depression is one of the few times that you see the wear of celebrity on a white male in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they seem to be finding happiness, to me, it's like, oh, the good for them, right? Like, and also there's, you know, people I think sometimes have, depending on what your ex is like, there is this kind of like, well, what would happen if we tried this again? Like, would that be interesting? Would that be horrible? A lot depends on your relationship with your ex.
Definitely. Yeah.
It would be interesting for other people to watch either way, I think. So maybe that's why.
Yes. Totally.
But, you know, I think also one of the biggest changes in our culture as a whole since the first time Bennifer was together is, of course, the rise of social media. I mean, before they and other celebrities kind of needed the press, but now they can just talk directly to their fans with Twitter, Instagram, TikTok.
Totally.
So can you give us some examples of how they're using social media to their benefit?
Well, my favorite example was actually the like official reveal of the relationship, which the like photo shoot of like Jen just looking amazing,
so amazing
on her 50th birthday.
Yes.
And then the last photo, like the last in the wheel on the Instagram wheel is her and Ben. I'm like, just so smart. It is an absolute like A+ move. And I think like for people who are consumers of celebrity today, the quality of celebrity has changed. The savviness, the like the way that they manipulate the game. And part of this is in part that like the new genre of celebrity, the dominant mode of celebrity, is a sort of celebrity that is always performing, always transparent, always turning themselves inside out on social media. There's very little intrigue or secret or anything that like you could be revealed. Like everything is about drama, but none of the drama is meted out in any sort of way. Does this make sense?
Yeah,
I feel like we have reality TV to blame for that almost.
Yeah, yeah. No, and like the seed is in reality TV and then that evolves into, YouTube stars and influencers, right? Which really make up the majority of celebrities that are out mm-hmm. there right now, are celebrities definitely. That are performing in this way. And so when you look at someone like J-Lo and Ben, like they are old school in mm-hmm. that they are actually older, but they are right. also old school largely in the way that they like think about their celebrity and wield their celebrity and like think in just a PR sense in terms of withholding and disclosing.
Yeah. Well, it feels like now that instead of being at the mercy of the paparazzi, Ben and J-Lo are using them to construct a very controlled narrative of this mm-hmm. reunion. I mean, the pops definitely have less power now, but they're still part of the story. Do you think you can talk a little bit about where the paparazzi does fit in with this new version of Bennifer?
Oh, I think that they are using the paparazzi very strategically. And this is the interesting thing is that like when in the early and mid 2000s, the paparazzi really were in control. Like they were controlling the narrative. The stars did not know how to live their lives without that constant surveillance. And I've written before about how what happened over the course of that decade is the celebrities figured out how to surveil themselves and essentially kill or significantly decrease the market for paparazzi photos. Like the actual paparazzi that are out there now is even much, much lower than it ever was before. And so like to have these paparazzi like catch them in Big Sky, Montana, like someone has tipped them. I live in Montana. Like there are a lot of celebrities who go to Big Sky, but there's not that much of interest that they do when they come to Montana. So someone has tipped that this is something that's going to happen. So they are, I think, wielding these images to create like a slow drip of information that also, I think, smartly got people excited about the relationship instead of thinking of it as like scandalous in some way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one example of this is the image of Bennifer that just went viral of Ben grabbing her butt on a yacht. Like, do you think that photo was an accident or do you think they're just baiting the paparazzi?
Like they're so in on that joke. I mean, they were in on that joke in the Jenny from the Block video. Reenact the grabbing of the ass. Like it's funny. And I think that cheekiness, like that makes people like them more.
Yeah, it's endearing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like we just said, the photo was a shot for shot basically of the Jenny from the Block music video. And the thing is, I mean, there are, of course, so many conspiracy theories out there. Are we reading too much into this or are all of these callbacks truly intentional?
I mean, it doesn't really matter. That's what I think. Like, I mean, this is always the thing about celebrity gossip and about like the narratives about celebrities. Like what matters is the pleasure that we take in thinking about it. And as long as that pleasure is not destructive and homophobic and racist, you know, like as long as it's not like the narratives that we're creating aren't harmful, I don't think that it actually matters. Like celebrity gossip is about images. It's not about these people themselves. It's about the narratives that accumulate around these people and their meaning. And so that to me is always more interesting. I always appreciated this quote from George Clooney when someone very frankly asked him, how do you feel about people who really believe that you're gay and like create like, you know, slash fic about you being gay? He's like, I don't care. Right? Like if they want to, if that creates like meaning and pleasure for them, great.
Well, and it's interesting you say that because the first time around, people really seem to just hate Ben and Jen's PDA. And now they're basically just reenacting these things that made people turn against them back in 2002.
Right.
Do you think it's them kind of just being like, this is us and we don't care?
I mean, I think that there are some attitudes around PDA have changed. But also, and my former colleague at BuzzFeed, Alessa Dominguez, wrote a really good piece about this a couple of weeks ago. It's important to resituate J-Lo in the like racialized context that she was in during that time. So she was like coming off of this relationship with Puff Daddy. And like there was a different way that people were thinking about this relationship with Ben as a white man as well. And so some of the undercurrent, I think, of those PDA anxieties were like very racialized. Especially since, like, Alessa says this in the article, that, like, before J-Lo, Ben Affleck was dating someone so white that they thought that they invented yoga.
Man, that's well said, though.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank?
Literally always.
Okay. Well, the new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look, and it comes in luxe gold packaging. It feels incredibly high-end, but it is a lot more affordable.
Oh, yeah. The Panorama Mascara lives up to its name by giving your lashes panoramic volume and a fully fanned-out look. Its tapered mascara wand catches every single lash, including those hard-to-reach corner lashes. When I do wear makeup, I do the bare minimum, and that's usually eyeliner and mascara and lip gloss. And so mascara has to really pop.
Yes.
And let me tell you, L'Oreal, this baby pops.
Yeah. I do love the packaging. Like, I'm all about that.
So if you're looking for an affordable mascara that gives you voluminous, lengthened lashes, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
So as a listener of Even the Rich, you know that audio piques the imagination, which is why we're so excited for Audible's new collection of exclusive thrillers. They feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances that really bring the story to life.
Oh, yeah. The next listen on my list is the psychological thriller, The Silent Patient.
Ooh.
So it's all about a therapist who tries to unravel the mystery of a woman who refuses to talk or give any explanation as to why she shot her husband. I mean, it's going to be the perfect binge listen, and you know I love my thrillers.
I can agree. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog.
Yeah, new members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500.
That's audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500 to get started.
Okay, so jumping back into things, I know there are tons of people rooting for Bennifer, but I want to talk a little bit about the skeptics. We obviously can't ignore that they got back together right on the heels of J-Lo's broken engagement with Alex Rodriguez. And there's this theory, one of many, and this whole thing has been stage managed to make sure that J-Lo could save face in the breakup. Do you think that's true even just a little bit?
Well, here's the thing. I think that J-Lo likes being in relationships. I think that everyone has someone in their lives who is that sort of person, right? Mm-hmm. Who, like, they've known either in the past or in the present, who, like, they really need to be with someone else. And that feels important. And I actually think Ben Affleck is like that as well. Mm-hmm. So is it a quick rebound? Like, does it seem fast? Does it seem like it is providing PR coverage? Maybe. Mm-hmm. But it also, like, doesn't seem out of character for either of them as celebrities.
Yeah, right.
And I think that celebrities oftentimes use, like, different modes of deflection or ways of trying to bend the narrative to be a narrative that is more in fitting with how they see themselves and how they want to represent themselves. Like, Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner, when they were married, famously would go take the kids out to the park every time that there were rumors of infidelity. And then, like, the kids would get paparazzi coverage and it would change to a different conversation about him and fathering and their family. So, yeah, I mean, the way that I think of this more broadly is that there are different ways of approaching celebrity at all times.
Definitely.
Well, let's find out where you fall, because there's also a theory that none of this is real and it's actually just an elaborate recreation of the Jenny from the Block video.
I love that.
I know. There are a lot of, speaking of clues, there are a lot of clues that allude to that, but do you think that's possible? And if so, could that explain why they're moving so fast?
I don't think that's possible.
Okay.
but that doesn't mean that I think that it is an incorrect interpretation, right? So I remember when I was a freshman in college, I was taking my first film studies class, and I wrote this incredible paper about how Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid was like an allegory for the fall of Eden, right? And then I'm like, oh, and then they eat this apple. Like, you know, I traced all of it. And you can definitely make that argument. The argument stands up. And I loved making that argument. It felt very clever and satisfying to make this, to find all these ways that you could make that argument. that doesn't mean that the director of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid did that purposely.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, but that also doesn't mean that you can't interpret it that way. So right. I think that I can believe that this is possible, that they are recreating the video, and also think, like, believe that they are not intentionally creating the video. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's yeah, fair.
Definitely. I can hold those two possibilities in my head at once.
So you mentioned earlier about Sad Flick, and of course we have to talk about that. Yeah. And in 2017, you wrote an essay for BuzzFeed called The Unbearable Sadness of Ben Affleck, where you talk about his public image, very meme-worthy. how has his image changed over the years? And what is it like now? I mean, we talk about the cigarettes and just there's that image of him just kind of like inhaling with the world on his shoulders.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's shifted recently.
Yeah, I think you're right. One of the things that became really clear to me in reporting out that article is that he talked a lot, especially in the 90s. And a lot of this was in interviews that, like, you had to actually buy the magazine on eBay. Like, you can't find them online necessarily anymore. But he has a lot of class anxiety. Like, he really feels like he was not someone who belonged in these more, like, bourgeois spaces and trying to figure that out. And, you know, there's always been this questioning of whether or not he and Matt Damon actually wrote the screenplay for Good Will Hunting. Like, is he actually a good director? Is he actually a good actor? Like, there's been a consistent questioning of his skill and whether he belongs. And I think the fact that he came up alongside Matt Damon, who has not been questioned in the same way, probably created a lot of anxiety and stress. And, like, I think that his image just generally through the processes that we've been talking about over the course of this, like, the fact that there was so much celebrity gossip about him, oftentimes that ends up feminizing a male star. And so probably, like, there's, like, weird currents swirling around that.
Yeah.
Did he, like, come to terms with that? Did he, like, decide to own it? Is he, like, I am successful? Is he just older? What do you guys think?
Oh, gosh.
No. I mean,
I feel like it's a combination.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, at this point, he's been in the public eye long enough that he knows how to play the game. And I feel like he's, and I think for a lot of people, we get older and we get a little bit more settled in who we are and what we want. Yeah. And granted, of course, I've never met him. So. Right.
Yeah.
I also feel like it's this kind of like typical Boston guy inside. Like, they don't care. Like, at the end of the day, I don't feel like they care. You know, I think he's just, like Arisha said, coming to terms with who he is and, like, this is me. Oh, well.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering, do you think J-Lo kind of helped him glow up?
Well, I don't know. I'd be like, here's a confident lady. Like, there's something, I think there's something that happens. And again, this is like, I don't know anything about his life and his relationships, but this is just a stranger commenting on his choices. There is a, like, when an older man dates a younger woman, I think that it makes them feel young again.
Yeah.
And when an older man dates a woman who is his same age or older, if they're comfortable with that, like, I think it helps mature them. Right? It helps them feel confident in a different way. Like, you look at J-Lo, and this is a woman who knows who she is and knows what she wants.
Yeah.
And that would be incredibly powerful to be around as long as you weren't intimidated by it.
Right, yeah. Right,
right. So going back to the viral Sad Affleck meme, Ben was caught on camera in a press interview for Batman vs. Superman. And like you said, he was just like gazing out into the ocean, basically. What do you think it was about that image that people were responding to?
Well, I think part of it is what we talked about earlier in terms of, like, it's just so rare that we see male vulnerability with like superhero action star. I actually think that that has become a little bit more common since the time of that meme. I think that you get a lot more stars talking about, like, the difficulty of maintaining a certain body image and, like, what maintaining your body in that way does to the mind and spirit and that sort of thing. Like, I do think that it's becoming more acceptable to have that sort of vulnerability. Yeah. But at the time, it was like, here is this, like, classic young Gen Xer who just seemed like he was kind of breaking before your eyes, you know, like he's trying to keep up the facade, trying to do the interviews, trying to be Batman, like trying to live this action hero standard and cracking under that pressure. And so like it's very difficult to turn away from that.
Yeah. And there is something else in your essay that you wrote that we're talking about that struck me, where you wrote, "But the sad flick look doesn't inspire pity. Instead, there's a palpable desire to punch him in the face," which made me laugh because I was like,
oh, that's
something that I get. I feel like a lot of people feel that way or have felt that way. And I'm wondering, what is it about him that makes it so easy to kind of turn him into a joke or a punching bag? Like,
well, okay, so here's the thing, is that I think I really did feel that way then. I don't feel that way now.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Yeah.
Like, that's interesting in so much as I think I had a lot of animosity towards him. Like, he felt like an asshole to me. And I think that, like, in this, you know, a very, like, Boston asshole, like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a real masshole who's like probably racist and like his whole family is racist, like that kind of guy, right? I had that feeling towards him at that time. And I think that that has transformed a bit over the course of the last 4 years, 5 years.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, in the essay, you really focus specifically on Ben's shame. And you know, our series kind of roots that shame in his relationship with his dad, who was an alcoholic.
And
then his own substance abuse issues later in life. But he's not the first celebrity to be an alcoholic. So what do you think it is that's so compelling about his struggle in particular and his, like, journey to where he is now?
I mean, to me, it all comes down to, like, there's something dynamic about his star, right? There is texture there. He has shown so many different parts of who he is. And even though some of those parts were like very unlikable, very punchable, there is a real fascination, I think, with celebrity, with people who change over time and who endure. And that can be true of someone like him, also Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie. You know, there are a lot of stars who, like, I think a changeability makes them stay in our heads, even after maybe they aren't, you know, earning as much or aren't as, like, the number one star in the world. Whereas, like, I look at someone like Tom Cruise, who is a very complex person in a lot of ways. There's nothing interesting about his life right now, though, right?
Right.
I mean, if you're interested, like, I'm interested in how he has managed to, like, cryogenically freeze himself while also still being alive. And I know that it has something to do with, like, Scientology witchcraft, but he has so effectively clamped down on his publicity after the disaster of the Katie Holmes courtship and aftermath that there's nothing interesting anymore about him.
Life is busier than ever. It might be harder to find time these days to grocery shop, prep, and cook healthy and hearty meals. I get it. But Factor's got you covered.
Yeah, so Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, delivered right to your door, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
Exactly. And Factor is tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. If you're traveling or still finishing up last week's meals, you can always pause or reschedule deliveries.
I mean, I know I've talked before about how much I love Factor because it's just so easy.
And it doesn't taste like, you know, the microwavable meals you see, especially in rom-coms when we're trying to heighten and highlight how sad and pathetic this woman's life is.
Yeah.
They don't taste like that. They taste so good, as if you made them yourself or hired a chef. Head to factormeals.com/rich50 and use code rich50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code rich50 at factormeals.com/rich50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
We all face stress in our daily lives. What if the answer to a better stress response is in one key nutrient? I'm talking about magnesium, and specifically Magnesium Breakthrough by Optimizers. This one-of-a-kind product is designed to reverse low levels of magnesium, which could have a positive effect on our stress response. But don't take my word for it. Here's a quote from a 2020 issue of the scientific journal Nutrients. Results suggest that stress could increase magnesium loss, causing a deficiency. And in turn, magnesium deficiency could enhance the body's susceptibility to stress, resulting in a magnesium and stress vicious circle. I only recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. It's the only organic full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress resilience and better sleep. Simply go to bioptimizers.com/ifstories. Promo code IFSTORIES10 to get your magnesium breakthrough and find out this month's gift with purchase. That's bioptimizers.com/IFSTORIES. Promo code IFSTORIES10.
So switching gears a bit, we mentioned a little bit earlier about how people said originally Bennifer wasn't a good fit. And you kind of talked on this, and I want to touch on it a little bit more about some of the critiques there were of Bennifer as a couple. I mean, why were people rooting so much against J-Lo especially?
I think that the way that J-Lo was understood at that time was much more as like a power-hungry, talentless woman, right? Even though she had actually been in like one of her best movies at that point. It wasn't a movie that many people had seen. I'm talking about Out of Sight. So like the subsequent movies, whether it was Made in Manhattan, The Wedding Planner. Like,
the best movie. I'm a huge Wedding Planner fan.
Yeah, me too. They weren't movies that necessarily like made people think, here is a person with a ton of talent, right? And I think that there was also this feeling that like, oh, she is like good at being celebrity, and people who are good at being celebrities, like who are brazen, who wear eye-catching things to award shows, that like there's something that is not classy about them in some way. And that, I mean, that's an interesting contrast with Gwyneth Paltrow, right? Who was just as much in the public eye and who wore very, very flashy things to red carpets as well. It's just that like the thing that she wore to the Oscars was like diaphanous pink and not very well fitted to her breasts, right? But I think that some of this has to do too with just the larger racialized but never explicitly conversations about her and about where she, like her narrative and being Jenny from the block and like what that means. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
No. I mean, and it's an interesting contrast to Gwyneth too. I mean, you touched on this a little bit already, but when J-Lo and Ben got together the first time around, there was, you know, all this coded language like urban used to describe her. And urban. And people seem to extend their racist assumptions about Black artists to her just because, you know, she dated Diddy and she collaborated with Ja Rule. Do you think that's an accurate assessment of the perception of her at that time?
Yeah. And I think some of it was like so often happens. People would never have been like, oh, we're racializing J-Lo.
Right.
At that time.
Yeah.
Right. They would just like, urban's just a descriptor. But like, you know who's urban? It's like, I mean, I actually don't know where Gwyneth Paltrow grew up, but like, if you grew up in New York City on the Upper East Side, you are also urban.
Yeah,
but it
true.
Is one of those words that we use as code for like, especially at that time, when I think we were even worse at talking about race than we are now. To say like, oh, like this person, it, like, doesn't belong with this other person, or this person, like something about their image is degrading this other image.
So do you think that that played into the assumption that she wasn't a good fit for Ben?
I think so. Like, I mean, and even this happened before, right? With like, so when J-Lo became associated with Diddy, like that changed, that inflected her image differently. And then that carried over when J-Lo herself was then associated with Affleck. It's not until you really look back and you actually look at the discourse around this that you realize like how explicit it was. Because so often like these narratives just become like, this is just the way that we talk about this. Like it's just talking about how like, oh, aren't they trashy? Or aren't they too public? Or aren't they, there's too much PDA? Or aren't they gross?
Yeah. Well, I feel like the contrast was really evident looking back at how the tabloids treated J.Lo and Ben versus Jennifer Garner and Ben. Like, obviously, Ben started dating Jennifer Garner after J.Lo, and he was more private about the relationship, and the tabloids seemed way more supportive of her. Can you talk a little bit about what her star image was like at the time?
Ugh, this is so complicated. So, like, now she just really has this image of, like, a very cute and nice and, like, a little bit quirky mom. And I think that was there, but it was more complex because at that time, the way that most people knew who Jennifer Garner was through Alias. And the primary draw of Alias, other than, like, the intrigue of the narrative, was that she, like, dressed up in slutty outfits all the time. I'm putting slutty in quotes here. So it was like she would dress up in revealing outfits with, like, that were, like, complicated wigs and that sort of thing. And I think, though, if you're looking at that in hindsight, those outfits were a way to underline, like, sex for her, like, any sort of, like, outfit that would approximate something that J.Lo would wear. That is a performance. That is something that, like, she has a great enough body that she can pull this off. But, like, the real her is a sweet mom.
Right. So do you think that's why she was an easier sell than J-Lo? Like,
yes, 100%.
Okay, that makes sense.
Did you want to think about that answer?
No, no. Like, it's just like, oh, does Ben Affleck, like, belong with this, like, a woman who has guided her own career and, like, figured out how to be, like, a triple threat talent? Who is also racialized in all of these sorts of ways? Or does he belong with, like, a nice mom? Like, a woman who is, like, going to give him three kids, which is what happened. I think that especially for what is known in gossip circles as the minivan majority, that latter choice was much more palatable.
Mm. Yeah. Well, can you just talk really quickly about how, like, race and class played into why people rooted against J.Lo, but were obviously happy to embrace Jennifer Garner?
Mm. I mean, like, Jennifer Garner herself, like, part of her image is just, like, I'm from a middle-class family in, like, West Virginia. Like, I'm just a normal person, which oftentimes it's a pretty common narrative, even though a lot of people who are in Hollywood are people who come from nothing. Right?
Yeah.
This is the oldest Hollywood story are people who came to Hollywood and had nothing, right? Like, couldn't even speak English back in the very early days and who became massive Hollywood stars. But even back then, and this was especially true of stars who were racialized in some way, like the common way that stars were often racialized back then was as, like, immigrants. And there was this fear, too, that these Hollywood stars, they were given money, and then they did trashy things with it, right? That they, like, spent it on garish objects, that they didn't know how to live, that they that they used it on drugs, that they got into trouble, that they act immorally. And I think as much as our society has changed since, you know, the 1920s, there is still this understanding that, like, some people know what to do when they get a lot of money. And I mean, again, no in quotes. Like, they don't spend it in ways that are offensive to, like, middle-class, middle-brow white America. And some people don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And so I think that J.Lo has always fit into that latter trajectory. Like, I think a lot about the Jenny from the Block video, where it's combining, like, all of these lavish expenditures in a really lavish and public lifestyle.
Yeah.
And public PDA with this narrative of, like, here's where I came from. Like, here's who I am. Like, I am a girl from the Bronx and I am from Spanish Harlem. Like, these are parts of who I am and I'm not ashamed of them.
Yeah.
Which was different than even the way that executives and screenwriters tried to just kind of, like, make her into someone who was tan and had blonde highlights. I don't know if you've ever seen these studies of, like, the way that they tried to, like, turn her into, like, a pan-ethnic character in a lot of different films that she was in after Selena. Yeah. I don't think it was ever as explicit as, like, can you believe that Ben Affleck is dating someone who's Latina? It was more just these larger percolating questions of, like, well, like, do they belong together? Are they of the right class? Are they a good match, right? Which is coded language of, like, are they the same race and are they of the same class background?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think we can also say that J.Lo has also had a pretty big shift in her star image since 2002. Back then, we know she wasn't supposedly good enough for Ben. That's what people were saying.
Yeah.
And now she's headlining the Super Bowl and getting Oscar buzz. Can you talk a little bit about how she managed her public persona over the years? What shifted for her? What her skincare routine is? Because I need it.
Well, can you, wait, do you know her skincare routine? Like, can you share it with me?
Isn't it just olive oil?
Just olive oil.
Magic is what I'm going with.
You know, I don't know how much her control of the image has changed so much as the way that we think about powerful women, that's shifted, right? Because I do think that she's done a very effective and very smart job of, you know, managing a marriage and a divorce and an engagement and, like, being with high-profile people and just, like, being in the public eye and still, like, keeping herself relevant. Like, she's done all of that incredibly effectively and skillfully. But I also think that as a society, that style for a woman star in particular is no longer unruly. Like, it is not something that you're like, oh my gosh, can you believe that she would dare do this?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is obviously a story that pop culture fans are pretty passionate about and I think generally want to see end well. But just to wrap things up, I have to ask, are you rooting for Bennifer? And do you think they'll be able to make it work this time? And will J.Lo finally give us a damn wedding?
Oh, I don't know if they need to get married.
Okay.
I mean, like, well, but I'm just kind of like a marriage skeptic in general. More fascinating would be if they just, like, continue to live their lives together and, like, just have, like, fabulous lives, like blended family lives. Like, wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah.
I actually do mean that because I think that it is cool to have celebrities out there who are modeling different ways of having family, right? Yeah. Instead of just, like, every time someone gets in a relationship, they have to get married.
Yeah. Agreed. That is true. That's all we have for you today, Anne. And I just want to thank you again for coming and joining us.
Of course.
Yeah. Thank you so much. This was really fun.
Good. Good. So, I'm glad that I got to talk about it for. Yeah.
I just can't get over that you have a PhD in this. Like,
I know.
I always think of PhDs, no offense to all the doctorates out there, as so boring, but this would be one that I'd be like, oh, this would be fun to pursue.
I can do this.
Yeah. Do you have any idea how many Us Weeklies I have from early 2000s that I had to purchase off of eBay?
Oh, you should have texted me. I used to buy those religiously.
Yeah. No, I mean, I should have texted you in 2011 when I was writing that dissertation.
Yeah. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Even the Rich ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams.
And I'm Brooke Sifrin. This episode was produced by Natalie Shisha and Kate Young. Our audio engineer is Sergio Enriquez. Our executive producers are Stephanie Jens, Jenny Lauer-Beckman, and Marshall Louie for Wondery.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.